you didn't fail at marriage. You can still have marriage.
Yeah. Mm.
You didn't fail at relationships. You can still have relationships. Yeah. This one situation, yeah, didn't work out. You know, like you yeah. can't, it's not a success. I mean, you're not still married, right? So it's not a success in that sense. But the whole category of connection and relationships and marriage is still open to you.
Yeah.
That mm-hmm. still exists yeah. for you. You know, so it's like I use failure in the very temporary sense.
Yes.
You know, yeah. For me.
No, again, totally y'all can disagree. Understand. Being able to see it as a learning opportunity to grow from and to see what areas in your life you can work on as well on yourself.
Hello and welcome to the 40s Formula, your go-to place for insightful discussions on navigating your 40s and thriving in this transformative decade.
We're your hosts, Amanda and Jasmine, two women that are passionate about exploring the challenges and adventures that come with turning 40 and what lies ahead. Shumi Hoon is a sought-after advocate, international speaker, and a trusted advisor to the modern family. With a niche practice in private client and family disputes, Shumi appears regularly at all levels of the Supreme Court on matters affecting the family, many of which involve the valuation of family businesses and novel assets, international child abduction, family violence, mental capacity, as well as property and trust disputes. Sophie Leong is a trauma-informed confidence coach, speaker, and thought leader dedicating to helping high-achieving women break free from anxiety, self-doubt, and burnout so they can step into their power with unshakable confidence and self-trust, build better relationships in work and life, and create success on their own terms. As the founder of Sophie Leong Co., she has helped hundreds of women heal deeply ingrained patterns of fear, perfectionism, and self-sabotage through her signature Core Confidence Mastery framework. She is also the visionary behind the Cycle Breakers Revolution, a movement empowering women to break generational trauma and cultivate emotional resilience, abundance, and self-empowerment. So today on the 40s Formula, we're going to be diving into a topic that we've not covered before, and that is divorce. So with us today, we've got Shume and Sophie Leong, and they're both going to be talking about the legalities and the emotional effects that divorce can have on families and couples. So firstly, it feels like divorce rates in the 40s are on the rise. Why do you both think that is?
In my perspective, women in their 40s are experiencing a huge shift in self-awareness. And so a lot of women, they mostly focus on and prioritize other things such as family life, career, societal expectations, and it is at the expense of their own emotional well-being. Their identity gets lost in the process. Some women, what I've observed is they will realize it over a period of time, especially when they are in emotionally abusive or narcissistically abusive relationships, when their self-esteem has eroded over a period of time. Others, sometimes they feel, oh, there's something missing. Over a period of time, they realize that, they can't finger point on it, pinpoint it, but over a period of time, they realize that there's something missing in their life. Mm-hmm. And so there are three things that I realized for the awakening of a person, right? So the first point is financial independence, right? When we are building our financial independence, we are less likely to be attached to that relationship, right? Because a lot of people, they marry due to financial security, etc. Not all, of course. The second thing that I've observed is really about the deepening of self-awareness. So when we're talking about self-awareness, being aware of the unhealthy behavioral habits that has been formed in the relationship. So it could be emotional abuse, but it could just simply be that, you know, things are misaligned. Because over a period of time in a marriage, people evolve. we got sold this idea of the happily ever after marriage, where you marry this person and they don't evolve, but people grow over a period of time and there's this disparity. Maybe your values have changed and maybe your perspectives and your desires have changed as well. So that's the second one that I've observed. And the third one is a lot of women, they generally get emotionally exhausted when they shrink themselves to fix the marriage. Nowadays, the women that I see in my private practice, they're not willing to shrink themselves anymore. They're not willing to compromise. They want to live an authentic life based on their terms. What I've observed is women today, they are no longer willing to be in that relationship because of survival. Mm-hmm. It's mostly about fulfillment.
So give us an example of what a woman shrinking herself for the sake of relationship, what would that mean? Can you like paint us a vignette about that?
So I have a client who she really just was fixated on saving the marriage, and she was not speaking up for her needs and who she really was, her identity, because she just wanted to have this relationship. And if we were to dig deeper, actually it goes back to her childhood wounds. And what we discovered is she was parentified. So parentified is a term where the parents expect her to parent the parents, right? Mm. And also her siblings. Mm. Obviously, in the process, you lose your identity because who are you? You're just parenting your siblings, you're parenting your parents itself. And so she doesn't know who she is, and therefore she doesn't have any boundaries. Mm. She doesn't have any voice of her own. An identity. So then in the relationship, she shrinks herself because she's not able to show up authentically in that relationship of her wants and desires.
Before I moved to Singapore, I remember sort of Googling a few things, and I remember seeing this article which said that Singapore had a high divorce rate amongst expats. And back then, the first thing that came to me was infidelity. Now, do you see that infidelity is still a leading cause when people come to you as a lawyer? You know, when I can understand sort of emotionally, do they sort of bring up other things as being the driving force rather than I just don't have the same values as my husband anymore? So from your perspective, do you see it a bit differently?
So statistically, what the data shows us is that there's a lot of breakdown at the kind of 5 to 8 year point of marriage. So maybe no kids or kids are very little. And then there's a bit of a break in terms of numbers. Then the second large period of time is when people have been in a relationship for quite a long time. So 15 to 20-ish years. The marriage is a long marriage. The children are very big, potentially teenagers going into college and that, right? So I think that kind of feeds into what Sophie's saying, right? Potentially for that second group of women, you know, they might be more stable, more financially independent. The children are bigger. They say, I can now make this decision that is for myself. Yeah. You know, now that the kids are sorted, I don't have to worry about care and custody issues. Now, with that, actually, is there's also some research in the UK. And this piece of research is quite controversial. It's called the Family Law Menopause Project. Huh? And it speaks about how the relationship between divorce and menopause. Yes. And they suggest that there's a link. I think out of the respondents surveyed, something like 70-ish percent said that they felt that there was a link between symptoms and the actual breakdown of their marriage.
I can see that. Yep. I can see that totally happening. You're going through all of this stuff, and your husband thinks you're batshit crazy.
Right.
It's like, who is this woman? No. I did not marry this woman. And then internally, you're like, oh my God, he's fucking pissing me off.
Yeah. Because this stuff is irritability, right? Yeah. Mood swings, vaginal dryness, things that like your husband's gonna notice.
Yeah.
So, I get it.
And it's potentially is also controversial because, you know, some people might think, well, it minimizes the woman's right to make a decision anyway. Yeah. And both could be true, right? Mm. Back to you, then you're saying, second question is infidelity the leading cause? So you know, in Singapore, when you file for divorce, you know, you can choose adultery. You can also choose unreasonable behavior. Those are the two kind of common fault-based grounds. Unreasonable behavior, the leading fault-based ground. Mm. But we do see infidelity quite a lot. Now, it's hard for me to say whether it is the leading cause. There's certainly a lot of marriages that break down because of other reasons, like value clashes. They just feel like, you know, we've been together for 15 to 20 years. The kids are big and now we just cannot talk to each other anymore. Mm. We have nothing in common. And yeah. I've just kind of kept it together for all of this time.
What would you say are unreasonable behavior? And does that unreasonable behavior usually come from the woman's point of view, or is it from the man's point of view now? Because I'm just thinking that menopause.
Filing? Like, who's filing?
Yeah, it depends who files, right?
Okay.
So, and it could be very, very mild behavior over a prolonged period of time. It could be a few incidents. So very wide ranging. Anything from extremely abusive behavior to like, this person's incredibly messy and doesn't talk to me when
I come
home.
And that's unreasonable, right?
Yeah.
And correct me if I'm wrong, adultery, you have to prove it here, right? You have to have a documented instance of adultery, which is why like a lot of times it goes to unreasonable behavior, because it's like, I can't prove it to you, but I know it happened.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. So you don't have to prove it happened, and that you don't have to have a video of two people having sex.
But you have to have like a text, right? Or like a...
You need something else. You need to show basically that there was an opportunity to commit adultery and an inclination. So these two people have spent a lot of time together. Mm-hmm. So, you know, earlier before the podcast started, you talked about that person with the colleague, their female colleague, right?
Yeah.
Or male colleague over a prolonged period. And then they went on a business trip. And then they went away for a weekend. Mm.
Okay.
And then there was a lie.
Yeah.
Right? Mm. So you kind of put the pieces together.
So... You know, a colleague who they're spending a lot of time with, they want to end a business trip. Is the business trip enough to show?
No.
It has to be a weekend away.
Usually what we would do is we would have a PI following the person's going.
I love it.
Yeah, so they were in the hotel room for like six
That's
hours.
That's my next job.
And then they would come out. And usually I think, you know, people, we're human, right?
Yeah.
So you're in a foreign country, you're relaxed. Yeah. And then there's a bit of hand-holding and kissing and something. Mm-hmm. And it's like, okay, we put the pieces together.
Yeah.
There's probably going to be adultery.
Mm.
That's very interesting.
Yeah. And then, of course, there will be text messages and emails and other things as well.
Divorce in your 40s or in your old years is very different to divorce when you're younger, say pre-kids. So let's say you've got kids, you've got shared assets, you've obviously got years of history.
Right.
What are the sort of the biggest challenges that people face in their older years when they're going through this?
So when they're older and they've been together for a long time, regardless of whether it is, you know, how long the marriage is, right? They would have built up assets together, whether those assets are shared or in their own name. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they might run a business together, right? So one of the big issues would be, well, you've been together for so long and at some point we need to identify what the assets are. We need to divide them. So a big one for long marriages would be, well, what are the assets, right? Yeah. Are these divisible or not? Would it be inheritance? Is that out because of an inheritance? Is it a family gift? If it is a business you run together, how would you value it? How would you divide it? Who's going to stay on to run that business? You know, because presumably post-divorce, two people are not going to want to run a business together, right?
Yeah.
And then, of course, there are other issues in relation to, is the woman financially dependent or not? What does the future look like? Are they going to reskill and go back to work if they've been financially dependent on their spouse or partner for a very, very long time? Mm. You know, and are they going to stay on in Singapore if they're here, right? Or are they going to go home? Mm. What does that look like in terms of employment as well?
So how does that work then? So let's say a divorce is happening. Mm-hmm. You've got kids. You know, you've been on a, say, dependent pass. And your husband's been the main earner while being here. Are you allowed to go back? Because I've seen these
with
things.
The kids,
yeah, with
like,
the kids.
Are you allowed to take
because,
the kids and go?
Because I've seen these things about, you know, like it's considered child abduction if you take your kids and you go back to your home country. Is that a thing? Like you're not allowed to do that as a parent?
You're not allowed to do it if you don't have consent from the other parent and it's not a holiday, right? So if you say, I'm going to take the kids back to England for 2 weeks and I'm coming back on this day, that's fine.
Mm.
Now, if on the last day you're like, actually, I'm not getting on a flight because we're over and I'm staying put, then it's a problem.
Oh.
Okay. And the reason why people say that's child abduction is because we have a convention. It's called the 1980 Hague Convention on International Child Abduction. Now, not every country is a signatory, but if there is a relationship, as in both countries are signatories, what happens is there is a court procedure that makes it quite quick.
Okay.
So the trial is done within 6 weeks. There's only very narrow exceptions as to why an abducting parent can remain in that country that they've abducted the children to. Majority of times, they will be sent back.
What if the husband cancels the wife's dependence pass?
Right.
Is that possible?
Yeah, so that can happen, but that would probably not be an exception that allows the woman to remain. Because there are other things, you know, so the courts would look at, well, can Singapore provide protective measures for the mother in that case?
Yeah, right.
They would allow the mother to stay here, provide her protection, provide her maintenance. Mm. Abduction or removal of the child to a different country is often, I would say, highly discouraged, just because, you know, even if you do it and you think, okay, I can do it, you know, I'm going back, home to me is India, home to me is Malaysia, home to me is some other country that's not a hate country, it could still be problematic. It's like litigation in two countries. Essentially, that process of a very drastic removal is actually seen to be very, very traumatic for the children.
Yeah.
So it's much better to kind of go in, plan to say, okay, can we negotiate planned relocation? Mm. Maybe not now, maybe when the kids are 13 or 16 or some milestone for them. And what does that look like?
So if someone is considering a divorce,
right,
what are the sort of steps that they should prepare for or think about if they're obviously just considering it? Like, what sort of things should they be sort of, you know, thinking about?
I always say there are four steps. Mm-hmm. One is to pause and reflect, because it's really important to understand what is actually happening in the relationship. Often in a relationship, it kind of highlights past childhood wounds or behaviors that show up, and we will not know until we dive deeper into discovering that. But when you do, then you can know where you stand in the relationship. And that gives you clarity on how to move forward, right? And so for the second step is to get informed, right? So getting informed is on a legal stance, having legal awareness. Thankfully, we have wonderful lawyers like Shumei. Mm-hmm. Financial awareness. Mm-hmm. And third of all is emotional support. Mm-hmm. So from professionals like myself, because when you go through such traumatic experiences, mm-hmm. it is even more critical to have emotional support. Of course, some will think about the financial burdens. So finding that emotional support wherever you can mm-hmm. is crucial. I have a few clients that go through the divorce process. When they are going through the divorce process, it's very difficult. It's very challenging for them because they feel the emotions and they sometimes are trauma bonded to the person, even though they know on a logical stance that person has hurt them very deeply. Third of all is building a support system, which I kind of touched upon. Whether it's your friends, whether it's your family, or even your colleagues, because it's so important when you're going through divorce, it can feel very lonely. Mm-hmm. Being with women who perhaps have gone through similar things, who see it in a positive light, not to drag them down with negativity, of course. It's important to feel that support, to be seen, to be heard, and to feel deeply supported. The fourth step is to prepare for the future, because when you're going through divorce, yes, it is an end to a chapter in your life. And you might feel like it's a so-called failure, but it's not. I would gently encourage you to see it as creating space for yourself, for self-growth, and healing, because what happens in a divorce is it highlights certain things that you might not have addressed, mm-hmm. behavioral patterns that you that arise from your childhood to heal. So it creates a more aligned future for you to actually thrive in your life.
Can I counterpoint that I actually do view my divorce as a failure? But let me comment on how I mean this. I think of it in the sense of the word failure, how I think of when I fail a lift, like in the gym.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, so I throw up this snatch. I don't make it, right? My elbow bends, whatever. I don't lock out. Barbells on the floor. It does not mean that I am bad at snatching.
Yeah.
And it does not mean that I am bad at lifting. And it does not mean that I'm not an athlete. It does not mean I will never lift that barbell. It means that today I failed at this lift. And yeah. so I think what would have been important for me to know when I went through my divorce years ago was mm-hmm. like, you didn't fail at marriage. You can still have marriage.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You didn't fail at relationships. You can still have relationships.
Yeah.
This one situation, yeah, didn't work out. You know, like you yeah. can't, it's not a success. I mean, mm-hmm. you're not still married, right? So it's not a success in that sense. But the whole category of connection and relationships and marriage is still open to you.
Yeah.
That mm-hmm. still exists yeah. for you, you know? So it's like I use failure in the very temporary sense.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
For me.
No, again, totally y'all can disagree. Understand. Being able to see it as a learning opportunity to grow from and to see what areas in your life you can work on as well, on yourself. Because mm-hmm. a lot of times when you're in a relationship, as I mentioned, it's a reflection of what's going internally, mm-hmm. the way that you communicate, the way that you show up for yourself, your attachment style. I believe that you've spoken about that before. Mm-hmm. It helps you to heal parts of you that allows you to attract a healthier relationship, whether you want it or not.
I actually know two men who are going through divorce, mm-hmm. either going through or have just recently gone through divorce. And both of them said the divorce came as a shock to them.
Mm-hmm.
One of them is a little bit more amicable, if that, yeah, in the sense that he still has access to his kids, mm-hmm. you know, and one of them is not going so well. One, mm. you know, the ex-wife has said things like, oh, he used to abuse me, he abuses the kids, he hasn't had a chance to see his kids. I think he's had a couple of visits where it's been supervised. Now, do you find that sometimes a female might make things up because she's angry or whatever it is just to hurt the other party? Like, mm-hmm. do you find that that has happened? And does it sort of hurt the case in a legal sense? And can you shed any light on something like that?
Yeah. So I think, you know, whenever allegations of abuse are made, you know, they're treated quite seriously.
Mm.
Now, when allegations of abuse are made involving the children, then it's treated also very seriously when it comes to contact or access or care related arrangements. And so then it becomes a bit problematic, mm-hmm. right? You know, I'm doing an article now about deep fake and AI imaging in family law. So, you know, internationally, what the courts are seeing is that people are creating fake imaging, audio recordings, emails, etc., to basically supplant or to what could already be real, right? So something could be real and you supplant it. Or it could be completely made up.
So could this be like your situation of they have to prove adultery, so they're creating an AI image or whatever it is, so that they can prove that
you're right. Exactly. But then what it would mean is just more work for us in just ensuring that, you know, we would say, well, sorry, you have to prove it authenticity, that thing is real.
Wow.
It's just like, you know, in the past, it's not like fake images didn't exist or fake documents didn't exist. In the past, what it was, you know, it was just differently done, less easy, less straightforward, right? But it could still have been done, right? So there are legal processes for these things. Now, back to what you're saying, right? Could it be that people feel inclined to make stuff up or exaggerate because they're in litigation? Yes. The way I see it is, you know, divorce or a breakdown of any relationship is actually a social, emotional situation. And the legal proceedings are there to kind of say, okay, this is what happens in terms of both parties' rights. But it's not a perfect solution for what the actual problem is, right? So you have an imperfect situation where the solution doesn't always fit the problem. And people use legal proceedings in a way to vent, to, you know, potentially raise allegations that are inaccurate or exaggerated, etc., in a way of getting back at that person. And obviously that is a typically ineffective strategy, and also a strategy that is incredibly hurtful to both sides in the longer run, and with the children as well. Because, you know, there is so much evidence that really children do benefit from having two parents in their life, rather than a parent who is, you know, when you talked about your friend, who is alienated or has no contact with their kids for a prolonged period. And sometimes I guess people can see spouses in a situation, whether men or women, they can see the child as another asset. Yeah. Like, how do I, if this the child is whole, how do I cover up the child's time? Like, it becomes a zero-sum game. If you want more time, you're taking more time from me.
Yeah.
And therefore, I need to fight very hard.
I mean, I don't know. If I had custody of the kids, I'd be like, oh, you can take them. Yeah.
I'd be like, you know what? All's forgiven. They are.
So how do you deal with a situation then if kids are involved? Like, do you find that people do want to have split custody, or do you still see that, you know, women tend to get more of it? Like, what's the situation like here in Singapore? Right.
So custody, the term in Singapore means parental responsibility, joint decision-making over major decisions.
Okay.
So it's like education, religion, health. Mm-hmm. So this sort of decisions, really you make it maybe a few times a year. Mm. Now in Singapore, most cases will be joint custody. The thing that people fight about is what we call can control. In different jurisdictions, they might call it parenting time or residence rights. But basically it's the right to live with the children for majority of the time. And in Singapore, assuming children are young, the mother tends to be the preferred carer. A lot of times, not always the case, the mother tends to also be the primary caregiver since birth, right? So most cases, the mother will have care. But we do see many, many cases where when it comes to slightly older children, that care is shared, right? It could be 1 week on, 1 week off, or some sort of alternating days. And that works if both parents are fairly evolved and fairly cooperative in their ability to share care. And I've definitely seen families who, if they can afford it, what they do is they actually have three residences. Their family home stays intact. And the parents then rent or have a small apartment or studio elsewhere. And then they kind of come in and out of that family home.
I see what you mean.
But that tends to be very much in the minority because, you know, you can imagine it involves very high level of maturity.
Yeah.
Do you find that though now? Like, do you feel that divorces are more amicable than they used to be? Or it's not as much? And a lot of the times the divorce seems to still be quite a bitter subject.
You know, in Singapore now, you don't have to rely on fault. You can either separate for a period of time or you can, by mutual agreement, file for divorce. So because of that, there are more amicable divorces. Statistically, not many cases will fight to the bitter end.
Okay.
I think the problem I see, or the issue I see when it comes to expat families, is that a big part of it is the issue of location of the children.
That's
a big one. And then just like international assets around the world, right? So sometimes it makes it a little bit more difficult. Sometimes there are two jurisdictions involved. One party might fall in Australia or UK or the US or wherever they think they're better off financially, and someone else might fall in Singapore. So then that's another layer to what the dispute. But it doesn't mean there are, you know, majority of cases are still very much, you know, uncontested in Singapore.
Yeah. What was that term that got very popular a few years ago? The conscious uncoupling?
That was
a Gwyneth Paltrow thing, right? Is there more of conscious uncoupling these days?
Obviously, divorce can be very emotionally draining. What sort of challenges do you see women, people having, not just during, but also afterwards as well?
They tend to self-blame. They blame themselves for their so-called failure. And yes, Amanda said.
So is it more self-blaming rather than it was his fault? I'm just kind of...
Sometimes it's a bit of a balance, right? But a lot of times it's the women that come to me, they blame themselves, but also realize that, yeah, it's not their fault. But somatically, their body knows there's something off, right? And talking about the trauma bonds, you know, that they've had with this person, because they've invested so much time with this person. And if we're talking about your nervous system and your chemicals in your brain, you're actually addicted to that person in a sense, even if that person is narcissistically abusive or emotionally abusive as well, right? And so what I've seen is that they have this fear, guilt, or shame that is going through their minds and their emotions of I'm not enough, or they fear that, you know, they don't have enough time to, in especially for women in their 40s, to rebuild their life as well. So through the process, I help them to reconnect to themselves, rebuild their sense of self, and then move forward from building their future.
After divorce, is there anything legally that needs to be done, or does it kind of legally everything stops once the divorce has taken place?
Right. So once there's a court order in place, you know, that should be fairly final. Mm-hmm. But what we see is, and potentially linked to what Sophie was just talking about, is that really the co-parenting relationship carries on.
Yeah.
So, you know, this person, which, you know, maybe there was a deeply hurtful breakdown, but you still have to communicate with this person all the time. Yeah. About the children, about maintenance, right? So these are the two areas where there could be continuing disputes over the children and over maintenance. Lack of payment, blocking of access, just difficult access arrangements. Abuse can still continue even if parties are apart. And you know, could have two separate homes, but there's all sorts of things that could still happen. Sometimes abuse could happen also through children.
Financially, let's say someone moved to Singapore, they were here on a dependent pass, they didn't really work during their time here, so didn't actually build up any of their own savings. If they were married to, say, a narcissistic person who did have control of everything, what can the party who was the dependent do in order to get some financial control? Is there any sort of rights in place for them?
So through the court process, there would be, you know, what we call discovery, which is basically the disclosure of things like bank statements and expense lists and, you know, receipts and all of those things. I think the issue a lot of times with such relationships is that the woman, you're talking about a female dependent, just has no idea what's happening for years. And only thing they might have in terms of knowledge is one joint account and a fixed sum coming in every month and potentially a supplementary card. And so that lack of visibility in a sense is a little bit problematic going into proceedings, not having any information. But there's certainly ways that we could support a client to say, this is what we could do to find out. Now, where a person comes to me and say, you know, I've been together for 10 years or 8 years or whatever, but I haven't contributed financially towards the assets, then potentially they are weaker compared to if they were to divorce in a different country, like their home country, if they had the ability to file elsewhere.
I didn't realize that. I thought it would be
That's why we did it here. So my ex-husband and I were both American. Mm-hmm. I am still American. I think he is too. and yeah, we divorced in California because it was very, very easy.
Right. So California, for example, is a 50-50 state. Yep, very correct. Clear.
Very clear.
England is actually generally 50-50, although there are exceptions as well. But Singapore isn't automatically 50-50.
Okay, can we not discuss this because I don't want my husband to hear this. So it's not 50-50. Right. That's interesting.
It's not automatically 50. It could be
okay
for longer marriages or where both parties have contributed a little bit financially.
That's I had no idea. Wow, that's interesting. Yeah. So then it is, so for expats, it may be beneficial then to file for divorce in your home country.
If possible. So what we would do is, you know, if an expat client came to see me, the first thing I would do is to check off, well, which jurisdiction can she file in?
Interesting.
Right, and I would look up all the jurisdictions and then we set up a kind of a group meeting with all the lawyers and all the jurisdictions, and then we'd say, this is the jurisdiction, we're doing it.
Obviously, I'm just using this as an example. Sure. That the husband wants to file in Singapore because he's been the main earner, it's his finances, and she wants to file elsewhere. How do you resolve that issue?
Yeah, that happens all the time.
Yeah, I can imagine.
That happens all the time. So usually, you know, it looks like it's a bit of a race, right? Yeah. Which court is going to proceed first? And so if the husband has filed in Singapore, Then usually what the wife would do is she would engage lawyers to try and stop the Singapore court proceedings, and he would try and stop the foreign court proceedings.
Wow. Yeah. This happened to a girlfriend of mine. If you're listening, I know you know, yeah.
Yeah.
He filed in Hong Kong because they briefly shared permanent residency there, but they were absolutely living in Singapore. So it was one of those things where they had this like brief history of Hong Kong, but then, but the Singapore court would have been more favorable to her. He went hard and fast, exactly what you're saying, to try and get the proceedings sped up in Hong Kong, because technically they were PRs there. So yeah, there's definitely shady business that can be done. And luckily they had no kids, because this would have come to a head. But yeah, it's the race against the courts, exactly what you said.
Is there anything that you think is pertinent for anyone considering divorce to know or think about that I haven't asked you guys? Is there anything that you think
divorce hacks?
Yeah.
divorce hacks.
And so actually when a client first sees me and if I see that emotionally quite distraught, not the most stable or in a great place yet, actually the first thing to do would be to get emotional support for yourself. Because you know, there's so much research on the brain and how really if your prefrontal cortex is just overwhelmed, right, you cannot think logically, you cannot make good decisions for yourself or your children, right? So emotionally you need to look after yourself, then kind of take second step. So I always think more information, more education is always good. Right, then you can take those steps like, okay, I need to start collecting my financial statements, I need to start listing out my expenses, etc. It's really important that when someone says, okay, I believe I'm a victim of abuse, to say, well, in addition to seeking help for themselves, to actually write down and document what that means. Because if someone came to me and said, I'm a victim of emotional abuse, like that's not going to mean anything for me to be able to provide them the advice. Right, so they need to say, on this day, he like threw something at a wall, or at this day he yelled at me and called me names, and at this day, etc., etc. So that needs to be documented very, very well. And where there's objective evidence to have that recorded?
That's what I was going to ask. So there needs to be proof, or
ideally proof, if not witnesses. You know, our definition of abuse is very, very wide. That it now can, you know, includes sexual, physical, and also psychological and emotional abuse. And it could be one instance, it could be a course of conduct. And there are many protective measures now in place in Singapore that could protect a victim or a survivor from abuse, such as like you could try and get an order to just say, stay away from me, you know, or no contact, no communication order. And really abuse is something that we see affecting all sorts of women and men. Right. It's not just, you know, a lot of times people think it must only affect the stay at home mother who has very little financial control. And yes, that's one part of it. But also it really does affect all sorts of women and men.
You'd be quite surprised, actually, what kind of women come through the door and seeking for support, because they could be high flyers. And, you know, they are strong, they're independent, they have it all, but behind doors, you don't know what's going on. Not to judge yourself when you're going through this process as well. Be gentle with yourself if you are going through this. It's important to seek help and support. The trauma-informed perspective of abuse. For me, I don't diagnose people, just to highlight and make sure there's a disclaimer in it. If you think that you need a diagnosis, etc., then you go and see a psychologist, etc. Through a trauma-informed lens, what I do is, you know, identify certain behaviors, but just work with what's in front of me at that point of time, right? So just wanted to be very clear on that. You know, when you look at certain behaviors and a diagnosis as well, it's hard to tell sometimes. And so it's really based on how you feel. And I want to let the women know on this podcast, even the men, right, that are listening. In the DSM, it says you need to have 5 out of 8, you know,
criteria.
No, it, to me, in a trauma-informed lens, is you experience this and let's work on it, get emotional support for that.
We are coming to the end of the podcast now, but I don't want to end on a downer.
Sorry.
So I do want to ask, what is your 40s formula for thriving after a divorce? Now, if you were to give some advice to women how they can look at this in a positive light, what could you say?
My 40s formula is pretty straightforward. So it's reclaim, so rediscover who you are, which is the process of reconnecting to your sense of self through the healing journey. Bring some compassionate energy within your space, right? So rather than judging yourself, just acknowledge where you are at that point of time and be gentle with yourself. Second step would be to rebuild yourself financially, emotionally, personally, just building that foundation of your house again. And third of all is to redefine what is love, success, and happiness on your terms, not on anyone else's terms, not on society terms, not your mom, your dad, or your family, just you. That is the formula, 40s formula for me, for my clients and the people listening to this, to thrive in their life.
Oh, that's lovely.
Love that.
I actually think, you know, aside from all the legalities, you know, as to what can and cannot be done, really operating within that framework to say, like, this is my opportunity to kind of make my own identity that's about me. Right. And what does that look like? And then am I going to reskill and decide, hey, actually, I want to reskill and get a new job. And what is that like? Because I can do whatever I want within these boundaries and to be creative. And I see sometimes a lot of clients who come back and say, you know what? I've just been my best self because I can now do whatever I want without having to report to someone else.
Yeah. I love that.
It gives you the opportunity to be you.
Yes, right. Authentically you, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Reclaim, reframe, reskill, rebuild.
Reinvent. I mean,
reinvent. Yeah, these are the themes.
The message about divorce is that it's an opportunity to reinvent yourself. That's what I wanted to drive the message.
Yeah. It doesn't have to be the end.
No, it's not the end.
Yeah.
I mean, we're always continuously growing if you choose to.
Thank you so much. It's been wonderful having you both here and sharing your insights on the legal matters and the emotional matters. So thank you, Sophie. Thank you, Shimei.
Thank you. It's been an honor.
Thanks so much for having
us. Thank you.
Yeah.
Guys, you know how much we love coffee. And if you want to show us some love, you know you can get us one.
Just visit buymeacoffee.com/the 40s formula. Cheers. Before we go, please remember to hit subscribe and take a moment to support the 40s formula by leaving a review on your favorite podcast platform.
Your reviews will help us to reach more people and allow us to continue to bring valuable content. It should only take a moment, and it's a free way for you to support the show.
You can also stay updated with the 40s formula by following us on Instagram at the 40s formula, all one word. We share behind-the-scenes insights, episode updates, and much more, so please be sure to hit that follow button.
We appreciate your time and support. Thank you for being part of this community, and we'll be back next week for more empowering conversations with inspiring guests.
Bye. Bye.
They've like temporarily blocked me because I did share the link of the podcast. And then it occurred to me they've got their own podcast. So I don't know if they're like their podcast is a bit different to ours. Yeah. I don't know.
Oh, I don't know. That shows you how much I use the Oracle scenario.
But maybe because they don't want you to promote yourself. If Sophie had said, listen to this episode of The Voice Formula, maybe it's a bit different.
That's
true. But if either of us two do it because it's ours, then we're promoting. I don't know.
I'll do it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. If you hear about people, like I said, in this
I'll do it. There's so many women looking for support.
Yes. There are, you're right.
So I thought, well, if I know someone, why not?
Yeah. You know?